pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning, 251-343-0106. Text me. Let me know what's on your mind. Coming up later on the program, Scott Stanhagen, the chairman of the Alabama Republican Party. So stick around for that. Just recap the news. It's the third hour. If you didn't hear last night, the Supreme Court, 6-3. They quashed a preliminary injunction from the coveted three-judge panel. Stanley Marcus, Terry Moore, and the infamous Anna Manasco that halted Alabama from proceeding forward on a 6-1 congressional map drawn back in 2023. So we are greenlit to move forward. A very interesting decision. They told the lower court what they had gotten wrong. That you can't use an outcome, an anticipated outcome of how African American voters will vote, and say that that is some kind of racial discrimination when drawing a congressional map. Quote, the district court failed to follow our instructions in Colay that the mere fact that voters of different races vote for different parties is not relevant to proving racially polarized voting patterns. That you have to take partisanship out of it if you're trying to make a racial argument against the state of Alabama. They did not do that. In fact, they flipped the bird to the legislature saying that by virtue of drawing a Republican map, you are being racist. I mean, it was blatant. It was very, very, very explicit in the preliminary injunction that they were taking that into account. And a 6-3 ruling, it wasn't a narrow 5-4, it was 6-3 with the three Democrats in the dissent. That's what it was. The early stages of the reaction to this are very telling. There's never been a good explanation to me why other states are able to draw their congressional maps as they see fit, be it Tennessee, Florida, Massachusetts, California, whatever. In Virginia, it's different. The state Supreme Court intervened. But they're telling you're taking this, you're stripping the states of this. And then they wrote, you're not supposed to do this on the eve of an election. The federal courts are discouraged from acting in this way. Well, then you could say, well, the state of Alabama did it on the eve of the election. But then it adds, well, the states are, in fact, the constitutional U.S. Constitution, the arbiter of determining their own maps. And in fact, the 2023 map was done far enough out of the 2026 election to say this wasn't done on the eve of the election. But they did go through all of the preliminary hoops and hurdles. But they never get that discussion down. Like, why should Alabama be treated different? And if you force the argument, ultimately it signals the state of Alabama is racist. Okay, why have you determined that our state, the Yellowhammer State, the state we all live in, we dare defend our rights, is racist? How did you come to that conclusion? Oh, look at the 1960s, guys. What was the 1960s? Things haven't changed. And the argument sort of ends there. There's no good explanation. There's no good argument. It's just that we know they're racist, and we have to take this corrective action. There's no due diligence. There's no due process. There's no, hey, these guys were, they woke up on a Monday morning, said, let's all go to Montgomery and have a special session and draw a map to disenfranchise the African-American vote. They're unable to show that. They're unable to prove that. It's just, that's the assumption that we're told we have to operate off of. And then finally, the Supreme Court said, well, what? That doesn't really fly here. You're going to show us a little bit more. They were never able to do that. Now, I don't think this is a legal argument, but to me, if African-American voters and black voters were Republican, and they were voting for Republicans, it wouldn't matter. We wouldn't have had this redistricting war. It is a partisan gesture. Now, you can disagree or agree with the partisanship of it. There's a lot of arguments to say that we shouldn't do this in a partisan fashion. We should do this in a blind, politically blind, communities of interest fashion, but that's not the argument. The argument is it racist? Because you can legally draw a congressional map based on partisan leanings. That has been adjudicated in the past, and that's a fair argument to have, but that's not the argument we're having. The argument we're having is, are they trying to undermine the black vote in Alabama? And that's not what is going on here. If African-Americans in the city of Birmingham voted for Republicans, if they voted for Gary Palmer, if they voted for Tommy Tuberville, whoever, none of this would matter. We're just talking about color of skin here. We're not talking about the partisan leanings. You have to separate the two. That's the law of the land now. That is the delineation now. That is what Calais has determined. That you could draw a map based on a partisan leaning, and you have to show more than just partisanship to prove a racial animosity. So we had that. We had California last night, and my reaction to it, I thought Republicans did perform it a lot better than I had expected them to. I think they performed about what they would in any other year. It's a Democrat state, so the Democrats going to win a plurality. It's a blue state. It's going to do blue state things. But there wasn't this overwhelming blue wave in California. It wasn't like an 80-20 outcome. It was closer to 50-50. And I attribute that to this, that I don't think anymore that I think this is the first showing that we're moving on from the Donald Trump derangement syndrome being the basis of Democratic Party politics. So if you're not winning California by big, big, big margins under the current circumstances of the incumbent president, gas prices, and so on and so forth, and blaming that on Donald Trump. It's interesting. Gavin Newsom is blaming the oil companies. He's not blaming the regulatory regimes and the taxes in California. He is blaming the oil companies. They're not really talking about Donald Trump. It's come up. But Republicans performed better than the expectations had them. Better than I expected. In places like Los Angeles. I mean, if you want to call Spencer Pratt a Republican, he's not your doctrinaire conservative. He certainly got a lot of FaceTime on Fox News. Same with Steve Hilton. But I think we'll look at California and you're starting to see it. The old playbook is not going to work in the future. It may work on this. It will work. In fact, it is going to work in November. And maybe even the 2028 November elections, yes, to some degree. But it's becoming a waning variable. And Democrats are going to have to move on from that. And how do they move on from that? What does that even look like? I mean, we're a divided country. It is what it is. But that's kind of interesting to me. I think it's the beginning of a trend. I really do. 251-343-0106. Josh, do you think Ricky, Gene, and Mommy Issues could become friends? Maybe they could disc golf or go skeet shooting together. I think they could start a book club together. Although Ricky may be the monkey wrench in the machinery there. Jason, Jeff, have you seen dozens of rainbow gay pride banner displays throughout downtown Mobile? Who approved this filth? I would expect Spiro and his opposing strong family values to not allow this. Well, it is Pride Month. Jason, and apparently we celebrate Pride Month in Mobile. Toothless Bammer writes, Jeff. One day this week, Laura Ingraham's show mentioned more than her on her show once the Mississippi Miracle and the legislatures. Montgomery seems to be stuck in the past. Isn't the Mississippi Miracle dealing with schools, test scores? Unnamed texter. You can't win when the system is rigged against you. Oh, but come November, we'll see what happens. And then adds, this is what I mean. Give an inch, you will want a mile. 6-1 is not enough. We want it all. Oh, yeah. I think you're right. I think you're going to get it. Old guy, please have Chris Pringle on your show. He has a good understanding of the motives and pathology of the lawfare behind the attack on the people of Alabama's voting rights. Well, he turned out to be right to some degree. He was less aggressive in that special session in 2021. And I still think he's got some animosity. But he turned out to be right about the lower court and the way the lower court was going to react. But I don't think he anticipated the Supreme Court. Maybe he did, but he was just trying to pick and choose his battles. But he had a map that was more favorable for the Democrat in AL2. And what happened that special session, it wound up being there was a House map and there was a Senate map. And there was Pringle in the House with his map and his lawyers and his guys. And then upstairs in the Senate, there was Steve Livingston with Chris Brown, his consultant. And they come up with something completely different. And they explained, hey, we can't hand Democrats a seat here. We need to do this. And that's what won ultimately in the Alabama legislature. But it turned out to be a big problem, legal problem for the state. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Scott Stadhagen, Chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, on in the next segment. Tomorrow on the program, we'll get April Murray Fogle, a couple of guests to be named later. I'll work on that at the conclusion of today's program. Mike, meanwhile, is staying around Goat Hill because she has nothing to go home to, no grandkids, no kids, definitely no husband, might as well stay in power. to get that good tapioca pudding after her late afternoon supper. I don't know about that. She had a nice place at the lake. I understand. Backstrap. Police provide some examples of large cities of black mayors that are doing better than in the past. I mean, like, you go to some of the big American cities. Think of Detroit comes to mind. I mean, there's just, it's not a universal rule at all. But there are isolated examples and that I think you could follow. Cities have ebbs and flows. Some cities, like St. Louis, is totally deteriorated, but Cincinnati has turned, you know, into a place you can go hang out. I think leadership does have something to do with it. What drives the economy there? New York City under Giuliani was like Disney World, and now it's back to what it was in the 80s under Deakins. Mondani is, I mean, maybe we'll give him a chance. But there are examples. And like, you know, I could speak on this a little bit. So my son and I, if you keep up with us, we got another big baseball excursion we're going to do this summer later on. And, I mean, it requires going to the heart of the city. Now, look, they spruce up that part of the city where a lot of people come into, and that's their exposure to a city. But typically, it's right there in the heart of downtown. And like I said, some places are better than others. There are success tracks with a African-American Democrat in charge. Maybe it's not a place you would want to live, Backstrap, necessarily, but they perform better than the other cities. Washington, D.C. has gone in the opposite direction. Maybe that has something to do with the federal government. Now, they have since called in the National Guard. I was up at D.C. about a month and a half ago. Spent some time around Capitol Hill, but also went out to Navy Yard to watch the Braves and the Nats play. And you saw National Guardsmen, but you didn't see as much crime. You didn't see carjackings. Matthew, I still believe the West Alabama Boondoggle will eventually be named the K.I.V. Memorial Highway. You're probably right. I don't see why it wouldn't be. I don't know who's scaring your break scheduling on programs, but they sure screw things up. Bill Finch's program was a fiasco. Talk on top of talk. I don't know. I wish I had an answer for that. B-Dark, Jeff, half the people living in Alabama now was not living in Alabama in the 60s. Yeah, I think you have a population boom and new people living in Alabama. You can't hold them accountable and take punitive action against people in the state that were not even remotely close to Alabama 50 years ago, 60 years ago. Miami issues. We banned him. Let's see. Fire Dog, without Orange Man bad, what's your platform on limited immigration, men and women's restrooms and sports, appeasing every rogue nation like Russia, North Korea, and Iran? Less policing and more crime. The best thing Joe Biden did was prove that none of this works. It's all in theory. It's all textbook. It's all, Fire Dog, it's like, this is the way the tweed jacket wearing professor says things ought to be, and we're going to try to implement it. But what it's devoid of is a real understanding of humanity. That human behavior can be irrational at times. That we're not all rational Starbucks latte drinking book club. You know, that the people act differently. There's substance abuse problems. We're a fallen people. And you can't operate like everybody's the same, but that's the way these academics want to apply public policy. It just doesn't work. 251-343-0106. Time permitting, we'll get to more of your texts. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Now, if your leather jacket means to you what this hat means to me, then I get...
Promise me, son, not to do things.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FN Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Wednesday morning, 251-343-0106. Time permitting, we'll get to your text at the conclusion of today's program. So please stay engaged if you can. Joining us now on the line, he is the chairman of the Alabama Republican Party. Always a pleasure to bring on my next guest, Scott Stadhagen, state representative from Hartsell. Representative, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good, sir. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for making time for us. We appreciate it. I'll just start here. Your reaction, Supreme Court ruled. I anticipated this, but you guys certainly have had your work cut out for you.
We have, man. It has been an interesting couple of weeks, and we knew that most likely this was going to take place. I think the timing of it was the biggest thing we were cautious with, and it could not come at a better time.
So we're moving forward. You feel good about all the parameters, all the boxes being checked, everything you need to do for an August 11th special election.
Absolutely. Finally. You know, after all this chaos, we finally feel confident in using the 23 maps. We feel confident as a party moving forward and gaining some seats back. I'm looking forward to get our candidates elected and get our team, you know, put together and get ready for the big battle in the general.
Yeah. And so, you know, even then you look at it, it's sort of overtime. We got a runoff coming up here in 2 weeks.
That's right.
And then once we get past that, then you're just sort of doing the blocking and tackling. You don't get involved in the primary directly.
Correct.
And then it's off to the races for November.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I feel like a football coach because we got our dry erase board ready with some empty positions, and we've got to put some players in those positions and get ready for the big battle.
Well, but legally, we think we're good, solid ground, that everything has been done that needed to be done. Is there any other foreseeable problems, challenges, et cetera?
I don't see any. I think SCOTUS, with their ruling last night, you know, I was literally sitting there on my back porch last night wondering, like, I wonder how the latest that they could make a ruling, you know, and I get the tweet, and I'm like, man, this is great. No, that's it. We are finally done. We can finally start moving forward with a game plan, and there's so much uncertainty before and confusion. We've got people that have literally qualified three different times to run for a seat, which is crazy. You know, when I go back to, you know, three branches of government, when you have a judiciary branch trying to do the legislative branch's work, this is what happens. It creates chaos.
As far as that chaos goes, it seems to have settled down, but I guess one of the criticisms about the entire process, not of our own making, people are confused. They don't know when to go vote. But, I don't find that, especially based on the turnout, that to be necessarily the case.
Well, no doubt Republicans can do a whole lot better in their participation at the ballot box. We saw, you know, numbers dropping that a little bit. We are going to really hammer out the message of how important it is for Republicans to show up and vote. I don't think it caused confusion for the most part. And, you know, it could have caused mass confusion a lot more than it did. But I think ultimately the citizens are paying attention with you guys and all the other news outlets who are kind of letting them know what's taking place. And with us, with transparency of trying to let them know what's going on the best we possibly can, because sometimes it's just you don't know. And now, you know, we've got dates set in place. We've got the runoff June 16th. We've got August 11th. We've got this primary. And then August 12th, we will officially have our Republican team, and then we will be preparing and getting ready.
Talk about this, and I think you alluded to it. You know, Republican turnout a little down in some places, and you know, I don't know if that will be a reflection of what is to come in November, but if you're looking at it as sort of a warning sign, I mean, how are you, is there time enough to make sure that that's not the case in November?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we're going to be doing some polling and just kind of getting the citizens' voice on if they voted, and if they didn't, why didn't they vote? You know, I think it's very important to know from our citizens where they stand. And it could be where I've heard from some people that, you know, some of these elections and some of these races has just gotten really nasty, and they, you know, they just don't want to participate in that. I get that. Some people, you know, just life is in the way. And I think, you know, some Congressman Gary Palmer is talking about a piece of legislation. They were talking about making our voting days a holiday, a federal holiday. And if you go vote, you can actually get off of work, but you have to have proof that you voted. And I think that is a phenomenal angle to actually get people to the ballot box and where they were able to vote, because, you know, sometimes you've got work and you've got kids practices and you got life, right? And of course you can do absentee voting, but I think ultimately we just need to make sure that people carve out 5 to 10 minutes and go in and cast their vote. Just because, I mean, a lot of men and women have died for us to have that opportunity and that right. And a lot of countries can't say that, you know, they have that obligation like we do.
But that's the name of the game. It's voter turnout. Primarily from your standpoint, it's Republican turnout and making sure, you know, no matter who they're voting for in a Republican primary and our runoff, that Republicans do stay engaged.
Yes, 100%. And I mean, just think about this runoff, man. How crucial is this runoff? I mean, this election is going to determine our next United States senator that's going to work in hand with Senator Katie Britt. We've got the Attorney General's office, huge position for our state. We've got Lieutenant Governor's office. I mean, we've got some serious races that are going to be on the ballot box June 16th. And I think it's very imperative that everybody gets out and voice their opinion on this one.
Joined by Scott Stenning, and he is the chairman of the Alabama Republican Party here on the program. Chairman, so you talked about this yesterday on Right Side Media's podcast with Amy Beth and Allison.
Yeah.
And there's a ballot challenge underway with Tommy Tuberville that the yes. steering committee is going to hear that. Walk us through the process. Walk us through why now and all the ands or ifs, if you would.
Yeah, so let's just go back. Before I was chairman, I took over March 7th is when I became chair. And this was there was a challenge before that was, you know, coaches' ballot access was challenged by McFeeters. McFeeters, you know, presented evidence to the steering committee, and they did not see enough evidence to move forward with the hearing, so it was tossed. Then McFeeters filed in court. The judge said the same thing, you know, tossed it as well. So there's another challenge that you can do, and once the election's over with, a candidate can challenge the person who wins for the certification of being the nominee. And that is a really tight window of when you file that. And to be honest, when I turned in the certifications of our nominees, I literally had to take a picture of the time that I had turned it in, because that candidate who lost and who is challenging has, I believe it's 12 hours to file that report for that, to file that challenge. Once that challenge is filed, then we have 5 days to meet as a steering committee, determine if we're going to hear it, number one. Number two, when we're going to hear it. We did that this past Sunday. I think given McFeeters' due process, putting this to bed, you know, let's get everything out there. Let's go ahead and do it. Let's be done with this. Let's move forward and, you know, focus on what really matters right now. And I'm looking forward to getting this over with, to be honest.
Well, walk us through what will be discussed. What kind of, I mean, evidence presented? I mean, what?
Yeah. You know, it's like a court. I mean, it's literally a mock courtroom. I will preside over it. The steering committee will be the jurors. You will have both sides, McFeeters and Coach Tuberville, and they actually can subpoena stuff for evidence. I think everybody saw that, you know, Coach released his tax records, and they'll get a time frame. I believe it's 45 minutes apiece to present their case to me and the steering committee. Then we will kind of deliberate, and then we'll have a vote, and it will be determined that day and finished that day. But most importantly, you know, everything's going to be transparent. We're going to be open with everything. You see something about backroom deals and all this stuff with the Republican parties, and that is not the case. We will be out front ahead of this thing. As soon as it's over with, I will do a media release, and we will go over the facts, and we will go over the decision that was made and why that, you know, why we made that decision. And from that, we're going to move forward as a party and a state.
And, you know, what happens, okay, so if the steering committee says green light, Tommy Tuberville's good, and he's the nominee, what if for whatever reason it goes the other way, then what would happen?
Okay, so just hypothetically, if it were to go the other way, well, then the steering committee would pick the next nominee for the governor race.
Would they do it that day, or would there be a
I'd have to check on the time frame of that. Guaranteed it would not be that day. You know, I don't know the time frame. I would imagine it would need to be pretty quickly. But yes, the steering committee would appoint the next Republican nominee for governor if that is the case.
Where does all this take place? You have a mock court setting. Like, talk a little bit about the backdrop.
Yeah, so it'll be somewhere around Birmingham. And, of course, we will release where it's going to be at. And then we're still going over the details of how we're going to conduct the business and conduct the hearing and, you know, the ins and outs of, you know, is press going to be in? Are they going to be we're still figuring all that out yet, going through the bylaws, making sure we're doing everything we need to do per bylaws, and making sure, most importantly, that Coach and McFeeters are both treated fairly. But it probably will last, if I had to guess, 2 to 3 hours max. Of course, it's on the 14th, and then as soon as it's over with, I will immediately be meeting you guys and going over all the facts and going over the results and just – finally putting this to bed.
Is something ever like this happened before, or is this pretty much unprecedented?
I believe 4 years ago, something to this effect took place with Senator Whatley and Jay Hovey. I don't know how long it lasted, but it was pretty hot and heavy, if you remember. But that's pretty much the last time. And that wasn't that's a little bit different. In this situation, theirs was, you know, the votes were tied and they were, you know, debating and determining all that stuff. But that's the last time this has taken place.
But you feel good about going into it, that the parties involved understand the rules. They
yes.
know what's ahead of them, that this will be a chance to air whatever the concerns are, and then a ruling will be rendered.
Yes. Yeah. And it will be, 100% transparent in everything that takes place. It'll be fair to both parties. But yes, it will. Once we're done and we're going to move forward.
And then it's just game on to the election. This puts that to bed. There's no other
yes.
way that this comes back up again if Tuberville is greenlit.
Yeah, as far as the Republican Party is concerned, yes, this is done deal. There's no more cards to play, so to speak. Coach will be our nominee for governor, and from that point, we will start focusing on, as the Republican Party, getting him where he needs to be to win the game in November.
Well, talk about it. You know, that'll be the top of the ticket. So further down. Good shape as far as the other down ballot races go. No problems there. We still have a runoff in 2 weeks, as I said, but there's no other unforeseen circumstances where you would have a challenge or any concerns like that right now.
Well, any candidate can file the same contest that McFeeters did. And they, as long as they, you know, they've got that timeline, and if that were to take place, we'd have to address it again. You know, I don't know if that would happen or not. I will say that, you know, if whatever comes across our table, we will be prepared and ready to to conduct business as we see fit and how we have to handle situations. But I think ultimately my goal is we get past the primaries, runoffs, and we get our Republican team and we start building our team and getting ready for the general. That is number one objective for the Republican Party.
And as far as that goes, I mean, what do you look at as places where Republicans can really gain, or if anything, I mean, are you having those discussions that this is a Democrat, this is someone we could beat, maybe even if it is a down ballot local race?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was in Connecticut County the other night. You know, we've got a sheriff and a revenue commissioner that, you know, has a possibility of winning that election and flipping those seats. I think those are just as important, especially in the rural parts of our state. I'm looking at those small local elections, seeing which ones we can flip on those, but also, you know, going up the list as well. I think most importantly, what we'll do is we'll start our polling and figuring out the, you know, the numbers statewide of where we're at as Republicans, where we need to concentrate. We'll have red zones that will really kind of emphasize our efforts and making sure we're successful in those areas. And after all these elections, that's when the fun part starts and we start strategizing and getting a game plan, making sure we're successful.
Chairman, folks want to find out more about the Alabama Republican Party, how can they do so?
Man, we are 3505 Lorna Road in Hoover. And of course, we are on Facebook, Twitter, social media. July 31st, we have our big summer dinner. I want to encourage everyone to come to that. It's going to be in Montgomery at the Renaissance Hotel. It's going to be one of the best events we have ever had. Looking forward to, and you know, this event is going to be more of a kind of like a rally, getting people excited and getting them motivated to turn out to vote number one in November, but also, you know, just spread the word of the, you know, we've got a new direction with the Republican Party and the things we're wanting to accomplish, and we're wanting to take our party to another level. And I would love to encourage anyone to get on our team and help us move that needle forward.
Chairman, we appreciate it. We'll talk again.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Underneath the mountain moonlight, hold her up tight, make a little loving, a little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon line. Fits my life, oh, so right, my Dixieland life.
More, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew when I fit on.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on what's left of this Wednesday morning. Tomorrow, Thursday, on the program, April Murray Fogle, a couple other guests to be named later. Mike, if April is your guest host for y'all stay to her, then I got to slide, I got to glide, I got to get out of here. Well, it'll be a mix there. But that's about a month and a half away. End of July, last week of July, first week of August, parts of it. So we have some time to settle that. Ultra Runner, who will Ivy staff pick for PSC? Murphy seems too red. Newman is BCA. She loves that, but he is also Ainsworthian. She doesn't love that. Does Johnson win by default? I don't know the answer to that. I hadn't even thought about that yet. Jason, if Caroline would have won, would we still see the same scenario playing out with redistricting in Alabama? Probably not. 6-1 Matt people are okay with. I do think you'd have a clamoring for a 7-0 Matt because Louisiana would have gone on as it had turned out. Then one more here, unnamed texter. The problem is there seems to be too many elections every time you turn around. There's a local election, state election, federal election. They need to streamline these elections. It's just our process of picking nominees. And it's upside down because the nominating process tends to be the election and the general is a formality in statewide events. So, yeah, I don't know the answer to that. We could do jungle primaries and everybody on the same ballot, but I don't think that would work in Alabama. Sean, coming up here, Midday Mobile at the Battleship, so y'all need to stay tuned for that. I got to get out of here. I will try to do better tomorrow. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.